What does Jesus tell us about our mission? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, your host. We're continuing our discussions of the teachings of Jesus, and our theme for today is our mission. My conversation partners are Paul Dibdall and Dave Thomas from the School of Theology, and we're focusing on that question that I just raised: what does Jesus tell us about our mission? Don't want to go anywhere else but Jesus in the Gospels to start with. What does he tell us our
and
mission
is?
And
who is our that you have in mind here, Alden?
That's a very good question. I wondered why they tucked that into the title. That's the official title and the official study guide. You want to talk about that first?
Well, I mean, who's our? Are you talking about the church in general? Are you talking about a particular denomination? What are they talking about?
What do you think Jesus talked about when he talked about mission? Maybe we ought to come back to that question.
Yeah. Okay, I think that's a good one. Our meaning those who have come to faith.
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think it's possible for some who don't even know that they've come to faith could be part of the mission.
Yeah. So I think the first thing to be said is that Jesus indicated that there is a mission.
Yep.
It's a fairly high-profile one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there are two main ingredients in that mission. The one comes in the what I call the Second Great Commission. And if you go to other parts of the world, they will refer to us who are from the Western world as you are go-to Christians. You go to there and you go to over there and you do your thing and then you go home again. And they're quoting the Great Commission, go make disciples of all people and baptize them and so forth. And I read an article by an African that fascinated me because he said, you have missed the first Great Commission. You are fascinated by the second one. The first one is, come and follow me. And he said that we need to have a balance in the Christian world between the go-to Christians and the come Christians.
Come to Christians.
Yeah, come to
me.
And he actually extended an invitation to people in the Western world. He says, don't come and do things for us here in Africa, he said. Come and live with us. See what we do. Join with us as fellow believers. Uh-huh. Don't come and build us things and tell us things and then go home. He said, we need some of you to stay.
That's wonderful.
So, I took from that, I think I'm struck by that the come and follow me precedes the go and make disciples. And we always talk about the go, but we don't talk about the come.
Well, in Mark, when Jesus calls his disciples and then is going to be designating the 12 as apostles, one who is sent out, so that sending thing, his first call is to be with him. And then the sending out to preach. He called them to be with him first. That's the coming to him, and then the going out.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that he starts by the lost sheep of the house of Israel. So it's a home-based mission initially. See? Don't go to the Gentiles. Go to your own people and share with them. So we've referred to Matthew 28. Go ye therefore and make disciples of all nations. What other passages in the Gospels can help us shape our understanding of our mission?
There's a section in the Sermon on the Mount where Jesus calls us to be salt and light. You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. So those are, I see those as missionary kinds of...
Now, I've always struggled with the salt one because salt, if you sprinkle it around, tends to kill things.
Yeah, it... I think it's a symbol that has multiple potential meanings, and we don't know. I don't think we know exactly which one Jesus meant, but salt has the ability to preserve.
Yeah,
it's just like milk. The New Testament uses that both ways.
Yeah.
I wanted to give you solid food, but you weren't able, so I gave you milk. But then you have to desire the sincere milk of the Word. Mm-hmm. So many of these images you have to look at more carefully to know how
they are. So actually the flavoring and the preservation aspects are probably the ones you'd want to emphasize, not the fact that if you put too much salt
around
it.
Well, salt is welcome. It makes things palatable. There's just something, pleasing. We could say flavoring,
and it's interesting because in the ancient world, salt was a very highly prized commodity. People traveled. I mean, you look at some of the old... travel trails over the Sahara Desert were to get salt. Mm-hmm. And people would go great distances to get salt because now you go down the grocery store and buy it because it comes from many different places. But in ancient worlds, it was almost like money. Mm-hmm.
But there is a sense. You mentioned initially, Dave, that salt kills.
Yeah.
You could actually do that, especially if you are technically a sectarian body that is countercultural. You get unhappy with the world, and so you come out. And you can be fully, in the technical sense, you can be fully orthodox, but you simply want a community that is more serious. So you come out. The ecclesia is the called out community, to use a New Testament word.
And I think of salt another way. I had a teacher when I was in junior high, and her grandfather was a farmer. He lived out in a rural area, and one day he was cutting wood. And I don't know what he was using, but it slipped, and it cut his forearm a big gash like this. I mean, like 6-8 inches long. And he was a pretty tough guy. He came into the house, and he said, I have to make sure this wound does not get infected. And he took a handful of salt, and he just rubbed it all over that, wrapped it up, and off he went to chop wood again.
For me, the point is that salt, if I had to select one thing, it's that salt is useful. I mean, it melts, it can melt ice.
Things. It permeates
things. So to be the salt of the earth is, it's not going to be the same for every one of us, our function in the world, but be a useful part of the world.
Yeah. And for most part, it's kind of quiet.
Yeah, that's interesting to me. It permeates things in a very quiet way, which is...
You can tell when the salt's not there, but if things are salted right, you don't even think about it. But when there is too much salt or not enough... That's when you wake up. It's kind of like running I used to run the microphones at the academy where I went, the high school went. And my supervisor says the mark of a good PA man is you don't even know he is there.
Now, what do you think about the witness one? Because that's another thing, that you are my witnesses.
Well, let's take the other one in Matthew first.
Oh, okay.
The light of the, a light set on the hill. Because there's a tension there, depending a bit on temperament, as to whether or not you're going to let your light shine or whether you're going to listen to Matthew 6. Beware of practicing your piety before others in order to be seen by them, for then you have no reward from your Father in heaven. So you got the one command, don't do things in front of others. Go into your room, shut the door, etc. But earlier in Matthew 5, Jesus says, a city built on a hill.
Yeah, but they're two very different purposes. The first one is, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father who is in heaven. So the ultimate, the light isn't saying, look at me, but the light is to glorify God. And I think the second instance is that you do it to be seen by men. So the very purpose is that you're glorified. So light is good.
Yeah.
Let it glorify God. And let's not try to take the credit for ourselves.
Well, coming back to Dave's question he raised, the witness, what's it mean to be a witness? I have some awkward thoughts when I was growing up, because if you look at the book of Daniel, for example, you have and that's often a pattern for Christians. His friends stand alone on the plain of Dura, see? And you have Daniel himself going to the lion's den. And he's going to pray, and it's made a difference. Now, he doesn't go do it deliberately, just follows his regular habit, see? Well, the other biblical pattern is an amazing one. It's Esther. She didn't say a squeak about her commitment until the time was right. Well, when I was growing up, we would have family worship. We had family worship in a regular way. We lived on a side street. But my dad always wanted to have the curtains open so that we would be a witness, where we would be a prayer, you see. And I was much more inclined to take Matthew 6 there, where you should go into your room and shut the door.
Close the door.
I simply don't like the idea of advertising.
So there is the personality difference, I suppose. Yeah. Is that what it is? It's probably personality more than spirituality or goodness.
I think of the difference between my wife and me. I'm very much a people person. Although it has shaped my ministry significantly, because I now react to situations vicariously based on my feelings of my wife. For example, I hate it when I'm in a church meeting and they say, turn to the one who's next to you and pray. Now, I think I hate it on my own, but twice as much because of my wife's reaction. So I think it's important for us to be, but recognize that there are some people who are incredibly embarrassed when you force them to do things of a public nature. And I think that's part of the story. Now, if we were going to define the mission, we've talked a bit about our mission. We talked about outreach. Which do you think is probably neglected most by the church when it comes to our mission?
Well, I think that the mission of the church has four components: to worship God,
okay,
to edify its members and others, yep, to evangelize, and to help those who are in need.
Now, if you take the one there that it seems to me in evangelical circles, that the one that we tend to give a lot of emphasis to is the one evangelize, mm-hmm, because that's probably is, and I'm just guessing here, comes naturally maybe to no more than 10% of the population, the natural salesperson type. Mm-hmm. They love that. And I think we do a lot of damage when we don't take the body of Christ seriously and let the different gifts go. I mean, the deacon who helps put the roof together is doing evangelism just as much as the evangelist who goes out and preaches and baptizes.
Well, he's doing church work as much anyway.
Sure, but it's part of the whole mission. And, of course, one of the things that concerns me is when we are too eager to count how many are baptized, we lose sight of the fact that the mission of the church is often fed by a great variety of people doing different things. Now, we have just a few minutes left here. I would like to see if we could contrast the mission of the church New Testament and the mission of the church Old Testament. It's often been said that the Old Testament pattern is stay at home.
It's, I guess the technical terms, and they're not that technical, is that Old Testament mission seems primarily centripetal in the sense that it's a drawing. You know, all will come to Jerusalem. They'll worship there in the temple. It'll be a house of prayer for all peoples, that kind of drawing in to the center. Whereas in the New Testament, you have more the centrifugal mission, which is the going out. You'll be my witnesses, Jesus said, in Jerusalem, Judea, and Samaria, and to the ends of the earth, the ends of the world. So you start, you know, at home base, so to speak, and then go out into all the world.
Now, you have some interesting pieces in the Old Testament where you have this, where you have Jonah sent, and you do have the prophets talking to the other ones, so it's not entirely
separate. It is not entirely
separate,
correct.
But I think it's important for us to recognize both of those and let people use their gifts, be part of the body of Christ, as is naturally the case. Next week, we will talk about a topic which is huge. In fact, we just did a whole quarter on it, the law of God. My conversation partners will again be Paul Dibdol and Dave Thomas from the School of Theology. I want to thank our program engineer, David Olson, for helping us out, and for all of you for listening in. For the Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.